What?
I'll drill.
Welcome to this week's Casterbris Podcast with a K, available on Casterbris, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Ladies and gentlemen, yes, you're back. It is indeed the podcast. We're back too. Well, two-thirds of us. Sadly, Brian can't make it this week. So, unfortunately, all you cosplay freaks will have to... And I say freak in the most affectionate way.
I don't.
You'll have to just make do with James McLean and me, Christian Corley, neither of which has a particularly striking 10th Doctor suit or sexy American accents.
However, I do have a bag of Jacob's oddities baked, which we could actually suggest is our third person on this podcast to replace Brian.
Right. Then we're not going to hear too much from them, I hope.
I don't know. We might.
I certainly hope not.
Oh, dear.
Was it you who was making the noise in last week's podcast?
I have no idea what that noise was. I saw it on the notes, on the comments, and I don't know what the noise was. It's beyond me.
Yes, me too. I wonder if
let me ask the oddities. No, they're not sure either.
Oh, Casterbris podcast with a K, hitting new lows.
Yeah.
Okay, then. So, it's podcast time, and we have some things to discuss. We're going to talk about a bit of news. We're going to talk about a few other things that aren't necessarily, well, which aren't news. There's no necessarily about it. They're just not news. I think we'd probably better say thank you, first of all, to everyone who's been listening to the podcast. That last week, and, you know, over the past few months, we've noticed that we're getting a bigger and bigger audience, which means we've got more and more of you, dear listener. And, you know, that's all well and good, and we love it, and we're very, very pleased. But we've also noticed that the podcast is now becoming the most popular post on the website.
Ha!
which, again, for what we do is basically just sitting down and talking about Doctor Who in a slightly...
more interesting manner than the rest of the website, apparently.
Quite well, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And also, you know...
Sorry, Philip and everyone else. You're just not as interesting as us.
And, but yeah, we can't, you know, we don't take it too seriously either. So, and for that to happen, well, it's just, thank you, is basically all we can say, really. We are just doing what we do. And you're obviously liking it, so we'll carry on doing that kind of thing.
And we look forward to all you thousands actually thanking us for doing it, because it's like it's a two-way street here, Christian. You know, it's not like they're doing it out of good manners for us. They're doing it because they're interested. Yes. I know it's shocking, and
you're absolutely right. Well, they don't necessarily have to just thank us. They could leave us a review on iTunes.
Absolutely. We're not actually doing this for thanks. So, yeah, it's quite important when you do. We do this. We don't think we really think about. Numbers really or
it's more of a social thing really.
It is, isn't it? And it's a fun way to sort of deal with Doctor Who issues and
a social thing thanks. Perhaps more for you and I than it is for Brian as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's because he's a big dirty hobnobber, isn't he, in the States.
I wondered what you were going to say then, but yes,
I know, so did I. I was wondering what was going to come out. What's going to roll out today? Is it going to need to be edited?
Okay, let's push on then. Peter, yep. What?
No, I was going to say, yeah, let's push on.
Yes,
let's keep this professional.
Indeed, as much as we can. Peter Capaldi has shared information in a number of publications in the last few days. Some of them are out, some of them aren't. Empire magazine here in the UK and Entertainment Weekly over in the USA. Speaking to Entertainment Weekly, he revealed, well, he says he revealed, he didn't really reveal because this was documented thing already. It's just everyone had forgotten about it, except probably Philip Seagal and Gary Russell and Peter Capaldi. He was on the list of people that were asked to audition for the 1996 TV movie. He says, I didn't go. I loved the show so much. I didn't think I would get it, and I didn't want to be just part of a big cult of actors. Turned out to be quite popular article, quite popular piece of news, interesting piece of news to a lot of people. He's absolutely right, though. He was part of a big cull of actors. I've checked my copy of Regeneration, and there are the names the big names in there that you would that were drawn in and that were focused on were people like Paul McGann, obviously. There was Liam Cunningham, who was obviously in last year in Series 7's Ice Warriors story, Cold War. There was also Mark McGann, brother of Paul. Tony Slattery, remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was one of them. And then there's this huge list, which takes up probably most of that particular chapter of the book, of actors that were shortlisted. And Peter Capaldi was indeed one of them.
Oh.
There's a lot of other people in there. There's, remember Rob Hyland? Rob Hyland?
No.
He was in The Vet Show.
Oh, right, no.
There was the guy from EastEnders as well.
The guy, because there's only one guy in EastEnders.
The guy who's now in Holby City. The one who's now in Holby City, who plays the doctor, the senior surgeon. Who's...
I don't watch this lowbrow stuff. I watch Doctor Who and I watch Neighbours. I don't watch any of it. That's my TV.
He was in EastEnders for some time. Now he's in Holby City.
Good for him.
He was on the list. Charles Dance is on the list. The list is endlessly large, so... It's not a surprise that Peter Capaldi was on the list.
Something I'm finding quite interesting, listening to Peter Capaldi and the stuff that we hear down the grapevine and on the QT, is that he seems a lot more seems a lot more vulnerable than people probably realise. A lot as actors go, there doesn't seem to be much. I don't want to say ego, but he seems to be quite a humble character in a lot of ways, which is obviously probably surprised people after the thick of it. And he plays these very large, powerful roles, like it, Three Musketeers is another example, obviously recently Musketeers, not Three Musketeers. That he does seem quite sensitive to his ability to perform these roles.
Yes. Well, we'll not go too much into that, but I've spoken to a couple of people who, as you know, who have said things along those sorts of lines. So I've kind of shall we jump forward a little bit then into one of the other items, because it kind of ties in nicely.
Okay, it was just interesting, the 1996, that it sounded like there was a sort of a feeling that there as well. He loved it. He didn't know if he could, if he was the right person for it in a weird way. And that's very much in tandem with the sort of stuff you've been hearing.
No, yeah, I think you're right. And I've kind of decided to start this kind of general Peter Capaldi is going to be awesome. He is awesome. And that's it, basically. And it's a kind of, it's a one website pro Capaldi advertising campaign. That's what we're doing. So I've outlined something. What were you going to say?
I think it's right, because I think in a lot of ways, I know a lot of people say, oh, he'll be great, he'll be fine. But you can sort of understand that while people say there is no age factor here, there is no issue of age, doesn't matter, he's not old or whatever. I think the underlining current is the fact is that there is ageism in society.
Oh yeah, God, yeah.
And once you get beyond 40, that starts to click into place, if not even earlier. So in a sense, I think it's kind of good to sort of keep pushing the positives of this, because I do think there is, it's not spoken about much, but I think there is a lot of ageism out there. I think there is a lot of people who think he's too old or whatever. And as an actor, especially an actor who loves something like a show like Doctor Who, which he clearly does, I think it's good to support him and sort of be positive and stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm going to throw my 10 reasons why Peter Capaldi is going to be awesome at you.
Okay.
It's just an outline at the moment. It's not a full article yet. It'll be popping up on Costobus late this week. Number one, he's Scottish.
Right, okay.
So he follows a trend of two other Scottish Doctor Whos that were also excellent.
Okay, fair enough.
Of McCoy and Tennant.
That's an odd one. I'm not sure I'm happy with that first one. But okay. Because the inference is if he wasn't Scottish, he might be a possibility he wouldn't be as good. And I think, I'm not sure I like that. So we had quite a few good English doctors as well.
He's got an Oscar.
Yes.
He cleverly avoided, as we've just discovered, auditioning for the TV movie. Which I'm being a bit cheeky there, because obviously I like the TV movie.
But I think the story and the way he puts it is actually something which is quite commendable in the way that he his position on it. So I think you could still carry that as the third one.
Yes. He's already travelled through time drunk. That goes back to the Alexei Sale sketch that we talked about a few months back.
Oh, God, Lord.
Which I will include in the list. He's the oldest doctor since John Pertwee was cast.
Right.
And he was excellent.
Oh, okay. Right. I was going to ask, where does that statement lead to the list? Yes.
Okay.
So.
You'll like this one. He's a fan.
Yes.
You knew that already, so let's rephrase it. David Tennant is a fan. Peter Capaldi, with his correspondence and friendship with John Pertwee and attempts to run an official BBC Doctor Who fan club, is an uber fan.
Yes.
He's one of us.
Yes.
Essentially.
One of you.
Yes. he's a veteran actor with 30 years in the business.
Mm-hmm.
He's a, in capital letters, big name.
Yeah.
He can outstare anybody.
Yeah.
And he's Peter Capaldi.
Okay. Might be a little weak on that last one. Just it feels like you're just filling your 10 up. You should perhaps go on with this
night. Another one for that one. As I say, it is just an outline at the moment. A version of that will be appearing on Casterbus this week, along with this is just a top 10. There are many more, at least 90. So it's over to you, dear listener / reader. Why do you think Peter Capaldi will be awesome as the Doctor?
Well, I think he'll be awesome because I think one of the fears that we sort of had in that sort of fears, like, you know, you do in first world problems, not like a serious fear, like in the rest of the world where you've got things to really worry about.
Yeah.
But was that, while I think either a younger actor could have been just as good and could have been very cool, and I personally would have gone for something between 40 and 50 in age, I think that would have, just because I think that would have been easier for a lot of people to swallow. I think it's good that it follows the trend that Doctor Who should constantly keep swinging in the other direction, trying different things,
reinventing and surprising,
reinventing itself. Yes. Yeah. So I think he's good in that sense, that he's a very clear, very strong reinvention, and I think that's quite important, and I think that's a good representation to be carrying.
Do you remember that clip of those two girls watching the Bailing show?
Yeah.
And the look on their faces.
Well, that's it. And I can understand, as an actor, if one, as you say, you're an uber fan, which means that it carries a lot more weight for you personally, and two, you know it's a big role that carries a lot of attention, and three, just as an actor, you know, there is a certain ego fear that, you know, you're not going to work in that role. There's a lot of things which, as I think, as a man, will be weighing on him at this moment, like it did with Chris Eccleston, and especially with only, what, 20 odd days to go. I think a bit of support is good.
Yeah.
I wish people had done that more for Christopher at the time, because no one knew. And I imagine with Christopher as well, a bit like Peter, you imagine him to be a sort of a man of such such sternness and experience that, you know, you wouldn't find that role particularly problematic. But I think, you know, it's kind of, I think it's big for anyone, isn't it?
Mm.
It's a big shoes.
Yes, indeed. Mm. Okay.
Mm.
We'll move on from Mr. Capaldi for now. We will, of course, be talking about him next time and the time after. And we'll probably be talking about Peter Capaldi every week.
Probably.
From now on, in some way. Matthew Waterhouse.
Mm.
You may have known him as Adric, dear listener. You may have got to like him as Adric. Or alternatively, you may have got to want to wring his neck or... just rewatched the last episode of Earthshock over and over again. Depends how you feel about Adric and the gentleman who played in Matthew Waterhouse. And he's excitingly said that he would like to record with Tom Baker at Big Finish. He's recently returned to Big Finish. He's done a Fifth Doctor box set, which is out this month. So it's the full kind of Fifth Doctor original cast of companions. So Adric, Tegan and Nyssa. And he said on Twitter, someone asked him if he would like to record with Tom Baker. And he said, I would be open to this. And I'm told Tom has said he would too. So it's up to Big Finish. How do you feel about that, James?
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting. I think, I think we've said before, I think Adric is a character which gets a lot of ridiculous stick, given that I think he is actually one of the more interesting Doctor Who companions, in the sense that he does buck the trend, especially in the 70s and 80s that was growing. Yeah. Where it was a what is it doctor, you know, he was a character who could do, he was an active character in his own right. He had motivations, he had background.
Well, he's essentially Zoe, isn't he?
Yes.
And the problem with that is that Nyssa is also essentially Zoe.
Yeah.
And I think that this is where the problems arose with him, isn't it?
But at the same time, his relationship with Nyssa was was slightly abrasive. So yes. It wasn't like they were the same character.
No, I mean, no,
he
no,
was
no.
quite patronising to her.
The role that they formed.
Yes, absolutely.
The role that they had in the TARDIS. You've got two people that can do that. And then you've got
But does that matter? Because you could almost argue that Amy and Rory are the same character in that sense, that they both lack experience. They're
you
both
could,
at the same time.
You could, but then... Both... I mean, you could argue that, and I would agree to an extent, but we only have to look at what they did. You know, sort of like leaving one of them in the TARDIS or sending one of them off on a fool's errand or whatever during the course of an adventure.
But is that a bad thing? I mean, the books and the comics started doing this after McCoy's era. They suddenly realised that, hey, and to be honest, the new series does it now, that you can just drop your companion off and go and not have them for a story, or you know, you can have them doing something else, or you know, you don't have to always have them there. You can always find reasons. This is a debate on the comments for this, and if you don't get involved in the comments for these articles, you should, because they're often quite interesting. His I think with Adric, what I like is that his tenure with Tom is so very different to Peter. The relationship is different, and yes, you can argue it could be something to do with the dynamic between actors, with Tom and Matthew in particular. Or you could argue, it doesn't matter, that it just makes it interesting that he has a very different relationship with Peter than he does with Tom. And yet, if you look at Tegan, her relationship with Tom and Peter isn't that different, really. She's as abrasive to both of them, maybe a little more to Peter. So I don't know. I like him for that. I think also the fact that, he, like Captain Jack, he has a certain ability to be independent in the sense he actually can read the TARDIS. He can actually control it to a certain degree, which means that gives him a certain amount of autonomy in a story where, again, he's not sitting there like Tegan or like Amy or, you know, having to say, well, what is it, Doctor?
Yeah.
I can't do much, but occasionally spout a humanism to one of the characters in the story. So he can actually be more active. I think the problem is a bit like Rose. He was a precocious character. And as I said in the comments, whether that was the actor or whether that was the character, the way it was written, I don't think it matters. I think the fact is in the story, he was a precocious teenager. And that's, and so I can understand that being slightly abrasive, but I don't think he was a particularly bad actor. I don't really get that. I think there's a couple of scenes where I think the direction was bad. And I think if he'd been a more experienced actor at the time, he'd have nailed it better.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, I think he worked. I think it's one of those things where fans build it up to an extent, I suppose a bit like we do with Time and the Rani, to be fair, to a point where he becomes this ridiculous travesty, which he really wasn't. He wasn't that bad. I think there's a couple of stories where he's written terribly, like Fall to Doomsday.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what the hell's going on with Adric there? I have no idea. But yeah, so I think it's good. He should go back with Tom. I think they had an interesting dynamic. I'd like to see how that would be written. And you know, that's how the actors would play it.
On the matter of Time of the Rani, we really should possibly address that at some point by discussing the one that we never ever talk about.
What time? What are we
Trial of a Time Lord.
Oh, right.
Because, you know, there is a strong argument that actually Mysterious Planet is worse than Time of the Rani.
Well, I think you're right. I think, to be honest, we could probably actually sit down and actually do, it would be quite interesting to do 10 good points of Time in the Rani. Maybe we owe it, given them out, or given what, three, four years of knocking it, to actually say, because there are some good things in there, I think. Yeah. It's not all totally bad. But it's mainly.
Well, Matthew also went on and said, I like this. He said, a lot of acting has a musical quality. I've always felt Tom's fab, rich voice and my lighter, flutier one sound great together, perfect for audio.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I think there was you take Legopolis, I think they really work well together.
Yeah, they do. They do.
I think that first opening act, and it's really just essentially the two of them just chatting.
Yeah.
And it works. And I like the fact that Tom has this abrasive manner with him. I like the way that Peter does as well, to a degree, in a slightly different sort of paternal way.
He just gets more frustrated by him, doesn't he? Yeah. Like,
but
he
again,
hasn't got the patience for him.
But again, it works. And I don't mean this is any disregard to Sarah Sutton, who I think has had a lot more fun in the Big Finish adventures in fleshing out Nyssa. But in the show, you know, this is what I mean. The girl archetype has none of that. Really, I mean, Tegan's an exception, really. They don't really get to have that sort of dramatic dynamic with the lead. And I think that's why I think Adric stands out a bit for me, is that you get scenes where there is drama between the characters. You get that in, oh, for God's sake. You get that in, you get that in Black Orchid. You get that in, you get it in The Visitation. Bugger off. God's sake. You get it all. You get it in all sorts of places.
I'm. Do you know what I? My kind of memories of Doctor Who, from as a wee boy. I have kind of two sets of memories. I have the sets of memories when I'm very, very small, and when I'm watching things from the 1979 run, and occasionally when I'm watching The Key to Time, things when I watched all of those for the first time on VHS, things came back to me. But my main memories are with the 1980-81 season.
Yeah.
So my first Doctor Who VHS also was Keeper of Traken.
Oh, right, yeah.
So although I can quite honestly say that I find Adric to be utterly annoying at times, I also like him a lot with Tom Baker. I don't like him so much with Peter Davison.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think you can argue there's times where Adric is really annoying in the same way that you can argue that with Rose, but it doesn't mean the character is bad. It just means in some way, you know, especially when it's teenagers, teenagers are genuinely quite annoying. You know, they're precocious and they think they know it all. And Adric has all that. And I just think it works because it is a fleshed character. And it's nice to sometimes, you know, we watch soaps. People who watch EastEnders, they don't watch it to have characters that they all like. They like characters that they find irritating. And often those irritating characters have a longer tenure than the nice ones because there's something that, that the writers can do with it. So I think it was a shame with Adric because as a kid, I quite liked Adric. Mm-hmm. I had no issue. And I was quite sad when I saw him die. And it's one of those great endings for a character because when you watch it over and over again, you do almost think he's going to make it each time. And then the vaguely drunk Cyberman comes in, shoots the panel, and then he's quite happy with himself to keel over and die. And it's just
vaguely drunk Cyberman.
He does seem, doesn't he? He just like he's been out of town a bit. And I think that's cool. I think it's a great death scene as well because it is so British. It's so understated. I think there's a lot to say for Adric's era. While there was some crappiness in it, and as you say, there are some times where he is just annoying. I just like the fact that I feel there's something there, as you say, especially in Keeper of Traken and Legopolis. You feel like the Doctor sort of is dealing with him as a person. While often with companions, I think they start to become a bit automated, and they do now. Yeah. I sometimes find that a bit with the recent shows, with Amy, and to a little bit with Clara, that you feel that they're there because they have to be there. In a sense, I kind of almost felt with Adric that he wanted to learn. You could almost feel, and I think, to be honest, that might have been a bit of a bleed of Matthew Waterhouse wanting to learn from Tom. Yeah. You almost feel there's an intensity in Adric where he's sucking in the main characters, if he's, you know, in Legopolis especially, is if he's really interested in this person. And a bit like Clara is with the Doctor, he says hypocritically after what he's just said. I don't know, yeah. So I think Adric's an interesting character. I think he's underrated, and I think Big Finish, it'd be interesting to see what they do with him. Because I think, as we just said, I think a lot of the problems with Adric is that he wasn't always very well written. They didn't quite know how to handle with him. Now, Big Finish is a little more in tune with Doctor Who because it's done in a different way. So I'd be interested to see how they deal with him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, time will tell.
It always does.
Oh dear. Ah, Tom Baker. Sticking with Tom Baker, he's been announced by eBay last week as being the most popular Doctor on merchandise.
Oh, that's not really a surprise, is it?
Well, probably not. I don't know. Well, David Tennant and Matt Smith are just behind him. Then William Hartnell fourth, Paul McGann fifth, which is a bit of a surprise in some ways. Presumably everyone is buying Doctor Who magazine, comic book compilations and Big Finish stuff on eBay. Peter Capaldi 10th.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, at the moment there's not much really to eBay on him, to be fair.
Oh, but he's 10th. There's no sign of John Pertwee.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, yeah, yeah. Do your numbers, James. Yeah, that's that's true. There is that is a bit odd, isn't it? Because the unit is such a big era for classic fans. As I've said before,
no Chris Eccleston as well in that top ten.
No, that's interesting. It was interesting, Sylvester McCoy yielding the greatest individual return for his figurine. That's it's a very eclectic list, isn't it? It's not one that you could really statistically break down. I mean, apart from Tom Baker being the top, which you'd sort of predict, the rest of it seems very ad hoc.
Yeah, no, you're right. It does. What's interesting is eBay spokesman Laurie Wilkinson Ray. It really speaks to Tom Baker's iconic Doctor Who status that he continues to outsell the other Doctors. It also seems like the universe is safe now as the Doctors are far outselling their bodies. For example, eBay currently lists 200,000 items of Doctor Who merchandise, totally dwarfing the Daleks' 14,000.
Yeah.
I would have thought 14,000 was quite a lot for Daleks. So.
Well, I don't think that's too bad, is it? I suppose.
It's not
too
shabby, is it?
It's what, 1 in 20, or just over 1 in 20. And I suppose people expect Daleks to have a lot more. I don't know. Maybe there's a truth. I mean, maybe. Do you think Daleks have caught on to the new crowd as much as they did with the old ones? I mean, I know obviously they're very popular still. We're not saying that at all, as baddies go. But I don't think Dalek mania ever really hit the new series as it did the old series.
I think it's difficult to say at our age, to be honest with you. I mean, they were clearly extremely popular in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they then returned at the end of the following year. And I think those two periods, I think it probably was as close to the original Dalek mania as you would get. We don't have that. You know, nothing is new anymore, is it? So we don't have that feeling that we would have had in the 1960s of these amazing creatures coming up, because everyone knew what Dalek looked like already, and if they didn't know what it looked like, they can appreciate.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's roots and things.
But that's why I think her comment a bit weird, because it's sort of always almost suggesting is why aren't the Daleks now got the same Dalek mania as they had in the 60s, you know, where we had films where they were the lead essentially, and you know, comics where they were running just solely without the Doctor.
Yeah,
and, you know, they were massive, and look here, there's only 14,000 out of the 200,000 Doctor Who items. I just think, well, maybe you're expecting too much of them, to be fair. 14,000 is pretty good, given that, you know, they are pretty much the same thing over and over again.
They are, aren't they?
Well, yeah, exactly. you know, Tom Baker to Sylvester McCoy is very different. And odd thing.
Have you ever bought any Doctor Who stuff off eBay?
I never have. I think I've only ever bought one thing off eBay, actually, and that was a Battle of the Planets annual.
Oh, right.
That I used to have in 1980 when I lived in Shipping Norton. I just remember it well.
You bought the same one? Or?
Yeah, then I bought it.
You sold it and then bought it back? How did you?
Yeah, I think I lost it, probably more likely than sold it, and then I saw it on eBay. I was going through.
So it's not the exact same copy?
No. I just had this this urge to have it again, because I remember having a lot of connections to the artwork in it, you know, that sort of feeling. So I saw it on eBay and I think I bought it.
Okay. I've got a few old annuals, but I think that's about it. I used to use eBay to buy Transformers that you couldn't get in the UK in the 1980s.
You bought off eBay in the 1980s?
No, Transformers that were out in the 1980s.
I know, I was just trying to destroy your sentence structure.
Yeah, I know you are, yeah.
That's all right. That's, yeah. Okay. You were ahead of your time.
Indeed, yes. Okay, dear listener, and indeed, if you're also a reader, dear reader, from time to time, I like to check the performance of Castobus.com just to make sure that we are fulfilling your Doctor Who needs by telling you the stuff that you need to know. It would seem, however, that some of you want to know a little bit more than we're prepared to tell you. Some months ago, we shared on the podcast the interesting news that an article called Room at the Top, which discussed briefly that Jenna Coleman would be appearing topless in a production of Room at the Top on the BBC, which was put off for quite some time, if memory serves, turned out to be 2013's most popular article on Castor. we seem to be in a similar area once again. Karen Gillan is mainly to blame. No, she's not. It's you. You're to blame, dear listener. And if you're not one of the listeners doing this, then you can skip this bit. You are to blame, dear listener, typing into Google Karen Gillan nude or Karen Gillan naked and then finding your way to Casterbus simply because Karen Gillan has appeared naked in a promotional video or snap for her upcoming US sitcom Selfie. And, you know, some days we even have both of them listed as extremely popular articles. That's Karen Gillan's naked selfie and Room at the Top. I really don't know where to put myself. Dear listener, this is obscene. What are you playing at? I'm uncomfortable talking about it, James.
Do you feel unhappy that for all your hard work on the site as an editor, the two main those two main articles, the thrust of it is nothing to do
Stop
with
saying
the pet
thrust.
Ship. Thrust is a great word.
I'm not so much.
Do you gyrate with anger?
Do I gyrate with anger? Oh, not like Elvis. No, I think it's a more of a. I don't mind any article doing very well in the kind of week in which it was published. I'm very, very pleased to see an article doing well in the week it's published. For an article that's a year old, is very annoying. And again, with the selfie one, that's a couple of months old now. So I find it frustrating that, you know, these efforts are going in, especially as how we've reformatted things slightly over the last few months to do less kind of out and out news and more, you know, discussion news. It's there. What?
Is the media to blame, really, in the sense that we can't deny that. And even Moffat has even sort of said this quite outright, that these actresses to a certain degree are cast on the fact that they're hot, that they are attractive, that they are alluring. So in a sense, that it's no surprise that the reaction to that will be that the males and females, I imagine as well, will have an urge to see a little more of them because they have been encouraged. Now, again, I'm not saying that puts the ownership on the media. I am sort of being flippant here.
You
go down the logic of saying that women can't go out in a short skirt because that, you know, they are becoming provocative to men to go and do things.
Well, you say that Matt Smith showing off his muscles in that clip from that movie that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one's looking for Matt Smith naked or topless.
Are they not? Are you certainly sure about that?
Well, they might well be, but they're not coming to Casterbus.
But did we do an article on that?
Yes, we did.
And it's not been... Well, okay, fair enough. I mean, I sort of understand the motivation. Sometimes I think, in a sense, that we all look shocked, and I imagine, you know, there'd be some rolling eyes at the production. But in a sense, the production does... What would be the word? It does indulge a little in the sexuality of its stars in getting interest. There's no doubt about it, and I don't think we can be too shocked that we have many people looking for these attractive ladies when, you know, the show capitalizes. I think the word is on these attractive ladies. So I'm not so shocked. I think I'm a little disappointed in the sense that it's just a reminder that sexuality is a far greater impetus than intellectualism. But that's life, isn't it?
That's life.
As long as they're not being invasive and they're not sort of... I think it's weirder when you get... We were laughing at this, a couple of my friends were laughing at this, how you get people who will actually stick the heads on to various sort of porn shots, worse, we were laughing at was actual drawn pictures of the most ridiculous and you know vaguely horrific ideas that are out there with these characters. And then I think it sort of does go a little bit too far because you are sort of you're depicting people without their permission. You know, if you want to do that in your own home and you want to draw Martha Jones with ridiculous male genitalia and you find that excites you and you like it, that's fine. Do it in your own home. But when you put it out publicly, I can't, to be honest, I can't remember. As I say, we were just sharing pictures we were finding and just laughing at the sort of sheer you know, shock value of seeing Jadoon doing things that they shouldn't do. That someone's drawn must have spent taken hours doing it. So they've obviously seriously thought about it. But yeah, okay, it's fine when it's things like Jadoon because they're not real. But when it's actual actresses and actors, I think you go down that road. I think you sort of, you know, unless they sort of say, I heartily endorse myself being drawn with male genitalia. I think it's great, especially if it's 20 foot long and surprising some poor darling. You know, that's fine. But they, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I think it becomes a thing. Is that there's a danger when celebrities become commodity, and you think that just because there's lots of pictures out there, not because they're making money being famous, that it gives you the right to sort of play around with their own. Because I don't think many people would like that. I don't think I'd like to go onto the internet and find myself drawn with massive female genitalia. You do know what I mean? I don't know. You think, well, it's me. I'm a person.
Indeed. And so, but then, I mean, it might be that all not all that surprising to some who might have already called you a massive tit.
Well, that's it, absolutely. And, you know, you never know. You might find that Karen might find it extremely amusing to see a picture like that because it's not real, it's silly, and it won't offend them. I just kind of think it's hard because you don't know. You might find, at the same time, you might find Karen would be quite upset to see that.
And yeah.
So, yeah, it's a funny thing. It's an interesting topic that you really need to wash your hands after.
Yes. Yes, indeed, I'm feeling a little bit that way myself now.
I think what is funny, though, of course, is with the Karen one, is that there was no... It was a sort of promotional cheeky tease. It wasn't.
That's right. Yeah.
Serious, and people have gone looking for it, hungry to see some elements of her body that they wouldn't normally see, and probably be quite disappointed. Which I suppose perhaps has a sort of bit of karma to it in the end.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, as I say, stop looking at these things, Doctor Who fans.
Look at my posts. Look at my writings.
Yes. Indeed. Not just mine. You know, I don't actually write that much on Cast Overseas.
No, that's true. No, that's true.
I'm just his guardian. For want of a better word. Okay. Do you know, how long have we been doing this podcast now?
Oh, who cares?
You and I, Brian.
Probably about three, four years.
We call it Series 4, don't we? Season 4, Series 4, or Volume 4, or whatever. So it's 4 years.
Oh, right. Four years. Lord.
So it's 2010.
Once a week.
2010.
Yeah, 2010, 4 years, pretty much once a week by and large. That's a lot of crap to have been talking about.
It is, isn't it? I'm surprised you haven't caused some sort of ecological disaster. Mm. Now it is August, and as you will know, James, and anyone who's read this particular item on Casterbus will know, it's 10 years since work began on Casterbus. Which accidentally became an extremely popular Doctor Who website.
As these things happen,
yeah. So it was myself and Anthony Dry, and both hanging around the old Outpost Gallifrey forum at the same time. He put up an advert somewhere, on a discussion board saying, "Does anyone want to set up a Doctor Who website?" And I'd actually already tried a couple of years before that, actually.
Was it on GeoCities?
Sorry, again?
Was it on GeoCities?
No, it wasn't. No. It was
Angel Fryer with a large hit counter, digital hit counter. No, 20. No.
It was called TARDIS-tastic. And it was crap. Don't get me wrong. It was crap, but it was self-hosted. And... it didn't do very well. I was the only person who visited it because, in 2000, I didn't really know what I was doing. So, moving back to 2004. So, basically what happened is, I said yes. We had a little chat about how we were going to do it. And then I didn't hear from him for weeks on end. And then he said, go to this URL. So I went there and there it was, the original version of Casterbus with an article about, it was either Paul McGann or Sylvester McCoy. I forget which. And then, it all went a bit mad a few years later, but we didn't launch. This is the thing that I'm getting to. This is the point. We didn't actually launch until 2005. So although Phil has written an awesomely amusing post, which is full of, it's actually all lies nearly. I just want to make that clear. There's very little truth in there. It's a very, very good spoof by Phil. We probably will be actually celebrating our proper actual 10th anniversary in January.
Well, that's good. My comment in the article is true, though. He did lift that. That's honestly what I felt.
What's that?
It was something along the lines of, well, 10 years isn't something to be proud of.
Right.
That's very true. You should be ashamed.
Yes, I am, yeah.
What will St. Peter say? Unless, of course, he's St. Peter Capaldi, and you'll be going straight in.
What would
you're going Peter... straight in. I remember your top 10 things about me joining Doctor Who. I'm not going to argue with that. But number 10 was a bit tenuous.
No one has ever said to me, what would St. Peter say?
Haven't they?
Never. No. I've heard people say, what would Jesus do? Which I think is a bit of a pointless thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Jesus is all well and fine, but you know, if you consider heaven to be like a big, wonderful super nightclub, it's St. Peter who's on the door. Whether you get to see Jesus or Jesus gets to comment matters on whether he lets you in or not. If your name ain't down,
I don't think heaven's a nightclub.
Well, it was.
I think there's a nightclub called Heaven, but
I'm sure there's several.
Heaven itself, the theologistic
it was more a metaphor.
It's an actual thing. And if it is, I don't think it's a nightclub.
Well, that's fine for you, because, you know, if you're not going to believe in the nightclub, I don't see why you should be allowed in. Drinks will be on us, and you'll be standing outside going, oh, kind of wish I'd actually thought about that through a bit more. Maybe it would have been a nightclub.
Oh, sorry, it'd be more of a beach.
A beach, eh? I don't know. Beach to me, a beach to me is the epitome of causality, of cause and effect, of erosion, and breakdown of structure, which is the antithesis of what heaven would be.
Okay. That's very deep.
Yeah, you didn't think about it, did you? You didn't think it through.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did, but. Not as much as you did.
Look, I know this is all getting a bit intellectual. I know you're the sort of type who'd far rather go on the internet and look for nude pictures of Jenna Coleman or Karen Gillan. That's fine. I understand that. You get people like that. We'll all of us, listener, will doff our hats and look at you in shame and walk away. I don't know. I sort of lost it at the end there. What's next?
Recommendations, young man.
Oh, recommendations.
Yeah. Do you have a recommendation?
Or is
your recommendation a sound effect? Everyone.
Well, I am pleased.
A woman's hand.
Oh yes, that was a great episode. I loved that as a kid. I didn't quite understand some of the subtleties in it, but he was so brilliant in that. I think we should start with just recommending, if you've not seen Blackadder's Potato episode, Blackadder II, with Tom Baker, severely hamming it up in the way that you can do in that show. And our captain is legless. Rubbish. I haven't touched a drop. No, I mean, you've got no legs. Oh, yes, I see. Carry on. I think the best line he has in there, it's one of the best lines of the series, where they sort of talk about a crew and he says that there's a division of opinion on whether to have a crew. All the other captains say you should, I say you shouldn't. And it's just so beautifully, the rhythm is just so beautifully done and the line is so great and it's just perfect for Tom. So yeah, if you've not seen Potato, Blackadder the Second, or you have seen it but you haven't watched it in a while, I think you should go and watch that. I think that's a particularly a strong recommendation from me. Now, I've not watched any Doctor Who this week. I've been very tempted to sort of pull out. I feel in the mood for an Invasion episode. I'm
sorry. Everything you say now, after discussing the nude stuff, is just double entendre now.
Oh, it's double entendre normally with me anyway, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, well,
pulling out, dipping into my Invasion. Well, what?
My groinal water stick is pointing towards my Doctor Who shelf, and is saying that there is something refreshing to be found in one of the Invasion episodes.
Right.
And I am sort of at the moment teetering towards the Dalek Invasion again, because it's just such a good pulp, you know, Invasion story, isn't it? It's just so easy to watch. It's so nicely paced. Although the Doctor's road to Bedfordshire is never quite explained to me. I never quite understand how he gets there so fast. given that you see the other struggle to get there, and suddenly he just manages to arrive there. Old man. But so yeah, I think I would recommend going for an invasion story this week if you're looking for a Doctor Who story to go for. You could even go for the invasion if you're looking to sort of bone up on on the invasion, given that there might be some sort of similar vibe in the new series.
Well, it certainly looks like it from
the, it certainly does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So that's your recommendation.
Yeah, that is my recommendation.
Okay. All right then. Well, I will update you first of all on my progress with Ripper Street Series 1.
Okay, go ahead.
So I'm up to the last episode. We'll be watching that later on today. Fantastic series.
It is,
really,
it?
Really good. And I like the way it gathers momentum as it's going on. Not when I say momentum, it doesn't feel like any episode is filler.
No.
Is what I'm saying, really. And I like that, you know, you've got developing relationships between people in there, and it's like a slightly changing dynamic throughout as well, which is also good between the team.
It's nice to have something I've noticed that the English have been in quite well recently is having very good lead actors that work. And I know there is a narrative term for it. I mean, I could steal an art term and say it's like a triptych. But when you have the three dynamic of three central characters, where obviously being a three, each can have a slightly different relationship to the other.
Yeah,
it particularly works well in Ripper Street with the three, and they're great. All the three of them are just play those roles well, and the script is just so beautifully colourful, and the effects. Is the series one the one with McGannon?
Yes.
Yeah.
I watched that. Yeah, no, I watched that last Monday. Yes, I'd forgotten about that.
Series one, I think, is the better out of the two series. Series two, I still think, is very enjoyable. Mm. There are issues in series two, which, from what I was told, were of concern to the BBC, that it was like a lot of series becoming a little inward, focused on the characters rather than the setting. Mm-hmm. But I'll be very interested to see where they take series three through Amazon, yeah, and see if they've learned from those two series and they get a happy medium for the second or for the third.
Well, I also like the fact that Jerome Flynn's in it.
Yeah.
Because he's if you're British, you probably know, or if you're British of a certain age, you're going to know that Jerome Flynn was, you know, he was in Soldier, and then had a pop career with Robson Green, and then he kind of fell out of...
But Robson didn't, he carried on, didn't he?
Well, he carried on, didn't he? Yeah, but sorry, Jerome Flynn didn't, and he was down on his luck for a time, and he's done a lot of stage, he's done the Tommy Cooper stuff. On the touring as Tommy Cooper, and now he's on TV again. I think he's really good in this.
He's fantastic. He is, and he's a bit like Billy Piper. Because of his pop career, you want to not like him. You want him to fail a little in a horrid way. But in both cases, you know, he is really good in that. They're all three of them are really good. McFadden leads it fantastically. Yeah. I actually was watching Ashes to Ashes the other day. In series two, he appears up as a Liverpudlian who's done a Bath marathon, staying in a bath for 9 months. He plays that. It's a totally different character. It's utterly silly, but he plays that. He's a fantastic actor because he's just so versatile, and he's brilliant in Ripper Street. They, you know, all three of them. I can't remember the name of the actor who plays the American, the Doctor, but he's great as well. And the female supporting cast are great too. They're just, it's just such a great ensemble. It just looks beautiful. And it's just written so well. I think it's a great bit of television justice that it's been picked up by Amazon, and I got the impression the BBC was a little shocked by that, and so they should have been.
We should probably maybe mention the Doctor Who link to Ripper Street as well.
You mean the boy?
No, the boy.
The telegram boy.
No.
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 What was your connection?
Lucy Kohu.
Okay.
Who is the Jewish lady who runs the orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
She's Captain Jack's daughter.
Right.
In Children of Earth.
There's an actual two links, actually.
What's this other one, then?
Well, there's the first link, which I think is a really obvious one, which I don't know whether it's intentional or not, but I always found it very interesting that the doors to the police station are sort of, if I recall, they're sort of slightly blue with the standard police box window panes.
Right.
But no, what I was saying, there is... as I recall, there is a messenger person, a kid who appears in Ripper Street at the police station, who does the same role in one of the Vashta Victorian stories. And they say, is he the same act? Is he meant to be the same character?
Oh, I see. Right, right.
Yeah, it's worth looking at. I can't, you know, because we do this off the cuff, we weren't expecting to talk about this particularly. I've not actually got the details in front of me, but there is this actor who plays a very similar role in both Doctor Who and Ripper Street, and they say, is there...
I've been watching a few things the last few days, so I'm going to... Ooh, which one should I do first? I'll do the negative-ish one first. And it also chimes in with your eloquent use of the word pulp earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Robo
and misuse, really, but carry on.
Got you on that as well. RoboCop.
Yeah.
The reboot of RoboCop.
Oh, yes.
I watched a couple of nights ago.
With Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, Samuel L. Jackson, some other people. Jennifer Ely as well. She's in it, the Pride and Prejudice lady. She's the OCP woman. And, you know, this is a fantastically well-made film with extremely good special effects, superbly cast, really well directed, and the lead actor actually does a very, very good job. And it does a really good job, the story itself, in addressing an aspect of the original RoboCop film in that the whole side of Alex Murphy's family. However, it's just not as enjoyable as the original. I don't know what it is. It's clearly a superior production, but I just find the original far more enjoyable.
But you know, the original is, you know, without sounding snobbish, it is kind of classic in the sense that there was nothing in there that really been done before that I recall.
No, I agree.
It felt very fresh, and. So I think that in a sense, because it's so iconic in that sense, it's not surprising.
Have you seen the remake?
I haven't. Right. It was funny because I was thinking going to see it. There was sort of quite a big build-up about it, especially on the internet, who were really quite blur about it.
Yeah.
And then it sort of came out, and then I heard nothing about it for months. And then I realised it was that it had been out. I was like, it's been out? And I've not heard anyone comment on it. But generally, I heard that it wasn't as bad as people thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and it's a really, really well-made film. Yeah, it just doesn't have that same kind of, I don't know whether it's charm or spark or energy or whatever it is, or maybe it's the satire. I mean, there is an aspect of satire in there, thanks to Samuel L. Jackson. There is that kind of thing going on in there. It's not as violent as the original, perhaps.
Is that a bad thing? Because I know people sort of say, oh, well, you know, it has to be as violent as the original. But the violence in the original was, I would perhaps argue...
It's contextual, wasn't it? It wasn't...
It was slightly gratuitous to a degree in the sense that you could still have played that story without it being as violent. I don't think it damaged it.
When you've got the two sequels, they kind of suffer from not being as violent, I think. I think that's one of the things that distract from those films is the fact that there's... You know, there's the comedic element and there's the attempt to not be as violent as the original. And I think that's why they suffer.
Yeah, and I think the problem is, isn't it, is that RoboCop was very quickly worked out would be very good to sell to
Yes, well,
to
exactly.
Kids
and then you've got the cartoon series, which is another matter entirely.
Oh, good Lord, yes, the cartoons. I think that's why people were a bit fed up with RoboCop coming back, because it had so many generations. It had a very poor series.
TV series as well. That was dreadful, wasn't it? The live-action series.
And then they even did a second mini-series of four in about late 90s, I think it was. And that wasn't very good. It was meant to be closer to the original. And it didn't quite... So, yeah, I think people feel like, well, it's had its attempt in three movies. Do we really need it back?
Yeah. I would watch it again, but I would watch the original first, I think, before I did.
If you've not watched the original, it is very worth watching. It's a very dark, it is a very nasty film. But
It's thematically similar to things like The Running Man and Total Recall, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
It shares a director with Total Recall as well.
And there is a sort of slight comic book element to it, especially I think these days comic books have that pushed that sort of violent edge as far as they can. So, Yeah, it's quite a nasty film in a lot of ways. But yeah, and it's very much like Judge Dredd as well. Obviously.
Yes, yeah.
So there's perhaps maybe a British connection there if you're
desperate for one.
I cannot find the link. There was a link. I know there is one out there. There is one character I think comes in, goes to Vastra and goes to to the police station. He's played by the same actor.
Right.
And people have sort of commented, is it meant to be the same person? I can't find it. If we can find it, we'll get it in the show
notes.
It's not
Thomas Thomas, is it? It's not him.
No, I don't think so. As I say, I never noticed it. I read it later on and thought, oh, that's interesting.
Right. So. Well, I have a second recommend, and this is an actual recommendation. Because obviously, if you recall, last time I talked about 4-2 for the Dark World, and obviously I absolutely forgot about Christopher Eccleston. Oh, how we laughed! And I've been continuing my Marvel movie watching, which means at some point I'm going to have to get to the Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. However, I'll be watching the X-Men: Days of Future Past first. So I've watched Captain America: The Winter Soldier, and I absolutely loved it. I think the first Captain America film had a lot to do, and it was enjoyable and it was fun, and it possibly collapsed under its own weight towards the end, but more or less recovered. And Doctor Who link for both of these is Toby Jones. Before we go any further, who was the Dream Lord in Series 5. And Captain America: The Winter Soldier. Have you seen it?
I haven't, no.
Right. I think this is the best Marvel movie.
I find that hard to believe.
No, genuinely, it's got everything. It's got action. It hasn't got too much romance going on. There's a little bit of a frisson between Captain America and Black Widow, but that's about it. It's got conspiracy. It's set in the modern day, but it's still got Hydra. It's fantastic. It chimes into a few conspiracy theories. Superbly produced movie.
It's still Captain America, though.
It is still Captain America, though. Yes, it is, yeah.
Does that not...
Captain America is great, isn't it? Because he's not a proper superhero, is he?
Isn't he?
He's not a mutant type of hero. Superhero.
Okay.
He just has that... He's like Wolverine, isn't he? He's an experiment.
Who is a mutant.
Who is a mutant? Yeah, but he's also got the experimental aspect of him. He's got that mutant side to him.
Okay, fair enough.
Again, the whole Captain America thing is... It's that kind of conspiracy theory world of building super soldiers. So there's a lot of... I mean, it goes throughout the whole thread of the Captain America series and we're going back into the comic books as well, that the conspiracy and the things like that. But actually, it's just such a great film. And again, Samuel L. Jackson's in it as Nick Fury. And he's really good as Nick Fury. I found him really irritating in the two Avengers films. And I found him quite irritating in the first Captain America film, but he's really good in this.
In the two Avenger films, you've seen the one that's not out yet.
You're
thinking of the Iron Man.
I'm thinking of the Iron Man film that he's in as well, Anna. Yeah.
I wanted to save you from a lawsuit. So that's been good.
Yes, thank you. No, I think he deserves his place in this one, whereas in the last one and in the Avengers movie, he's a bit of a tool in them. Wasn't he really, Nick Fury? But no, he's really good in this.
I find this all very hard to believe.
Well, get it watched and then tell me. It's a really good movie. Really, really good. Is it the best Marvel movie? It's the one that's excited me the most to say that is the best Marvel movie. But then again, I probably said the same thing about the first about X-Men First Class a few weeks ago. So...
I find these superhero movies always sort of fall apart on the last act, which is my problem. It's why I find them hard in the cinema. Because I was saying this to one of my friends the other day, that the problem with cinema is that because you're stuck in there, you can't have a bad last act, because that is when you're getting tired, it's when you're getting bored. And so many superhero movies have duff last acts. Even the only one that hasn't of late is Days of Future Past. Which I think manages to carry a good last act. So, yeah, I kind of got bored of watching them after seeing Thor, and I just thought, oh, yeah, I think really I'm going to stop on this. So apart from the X-Men ones, I've not really seen many of the superhero movies of late, not even the Avengers.
Well, you know, I mean, we've talked about this, you know that I like a good kind of Nazi being in the wrong place sort of thing.
Yes, you do. Without giving too much away. Yes, you do.
That whole side of things is that just sends my imagination whirling. So that's probably why I'm so passionate about this film.
Well, it's good to have a few recommendations which aren't Doctor Who, because in a sense, when you recommend Doctor Who to our audience, they've probably already seen it.
They probably have, yes. But I mean, I don't have a Doctor Who recommendation, other than I do know that there are some new reissues of... new reissues? What am I talking about? There's reissues of the Russell T Davies era hitting stores this week. So if you didn't get them on DVD for whatever insane reason already, and you don't like have a Hulu or Netflix or Amazon Prime subscription for whatever reason, now is your time to buy them at an inflated price when you could get them in on eBay or on Amazon or in CEX or wherever for cheaper. And I think that does... I mean, we're at the end now, aren't we? I think we're at the end of this week's Casterbus podcast with a K. That yellow kid from The Simpsons has just walked past. Sorry, I don't mean the yellow kid. The pale kid from The Simpsons has just walked past.
Well, I was going to say... that is
the one who isn't yellow in The Simpsons has just walked past.
Incredible.
It's an image of him. Chances are that. He's even got curly hair. And the podcast reaches its end for this week. It's just James and I again next time. Unfortunately, dear listener, for you.
Sadly.
To hear the dulcet tones of Brian Terridude. So until then, it's goodbye.